Hey, I'm Craig Wilkinson. Welcome to another leg in our powerful journey of being dangerous but good. It's all about how you can become the most effective, influential, competent human being that you can possibly be and how you can use that powerfully to be a force for good. I'm joined today by one of my favorite human beings in the world, Candace Mummer. She's definitely a force for good. She's a danger to many things, danger to unforgiveness, danger to hatred, danger to revenge, danger to resentment. She's got the most remarkable story and she's done the most amazing things with it. So Candace, wonderful to be with you. Welcome to the podcast, Dangerous But Good.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And may I say what a brilliant name this podcast has.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And just wonderful to connect with you. I know I've always called you Super C in the past. Your name is Candace, but you're a Super C, far more powerful than the Super C's you take for your throat or the vitamin C. But,
we call each other Super C's because of the great work that I love that you do all the time, Greg. Yeah. So.
I guess. Yeah. And just wonderful to reconnect. It's been too long. You're in a beautiful part of the world, Spain, Ibiza, party capital of the world. But you claim not to be doing too much partying. Is that right?
You know, it's so funny because there are certain places in the world that have a reputation. And yeah. Ibiza, as soon as I say it, everyone thinks I'm out like doof, doof, doof. And I always say I'm hiking. I'm literally having picnics. I'm too tired to party.
Too busy doing great stuff with your life, right? Leaving a legacy, to waste your time on the dance floor. Is that what you're saying?
No, you know what? I love a good dance. I think if you're looking for a party, Ibiza, there's no corner you can turn and not find one. It's just right. Not why I moved here. I actually moved here for the peace and tranquility, ironically.
If I remember correctly, you used to open all your video clips and your podcast with a bit of a dance, eh?
Oh, yeah. Your shoulders don't lie. But you know what's so funny? I can only dance on Instagram because I've got an international audience. So they assume I know what I'm doing. As soon as it hits South Africans, everyone is like, why? Why is she out there? Contain her.
Stop that woman. Look, I mean, you definitely make me look bad on the dance floor, I'm pretty sure.
You know what? It's the fiction. If you smile a lot and you do a lot of shoulder action, people don't know what's going on down there. They just, you know, the time.
It works. You know, you got to know the tricks, huh? You got to know the tricks. Yeah. So, Candace, I mean, from the moment I heard your story and you shared with me years ago, I was blown away. And, totally hooked on what you were bringing to the world. And maybe if you could just share briefly how you became to be, I mean, I call you the forgiveness queen, you know, the queen of forgiveness. And it's such an important thing in life, you know. Forgiveness just destroys hatred. But please share how it happened. It's the most profoundly powerful story.
Absolutely. And I will share the summarized version of it. And then you can ask me questions, Craig. We can take it whichever way you want to go. Yeah. But when I was born, when I was around the age of 9 months old, my father was brutally murdered by an apartheid assassin called Eugene de Kock. And so between the ages of like 9 months old until around 16, I didn't really feel the effects of not having a father. However, news clips would come out about Eugene and I started getting incredibly curious, but I also started getting very depressed. And I remember being hospitalized at 16 because I was just so angry and so bitter. And the doctor looked at my mom and I and he said, in my over 20 years of experience, I've never seen stress symptoms so severe in someone your age. And he followed with the words, your body is killing you. And if you don't change what you're doing, you're going to die. And that was the first time I ever realized how powerful our minds are when it comes to dictating the conditions of our body. And I remember just being so angry. And I thought to myself, Eugene de Kock killed my father. And now I'm letting him kill me too. And so for a few years, I just tried to stay alive. And to be honest, it didn't start from a place of forgiveness. I didn't think to myself, oh, this is what's going to cure me. This is what's going to heal me. It was more of this anger to stay alive and not letting him win. And I remember by the time I got to around the age of 23, I came home to visit my mom, and she said to me, I just received a call from the national prosecuting authorities, and they want to know if we would like to go see Eugene. And for context, for people who may not know this part of South African history, Eugene de Kock was called primeval by the world. He was called the assassin of the state, and he was charged with 89 charges of murder, and he was sentenced to 212 years in prison. And so I remember just standing there and thinking, yes. So I said yes immediately. And the day came, my entire family and I went to go see Eugene. And I remember the first question my mom asked them was, I just want to know what happened to my husband. Because at the time, we had no idea how my father had died. And Eugene broke it down for us that they had identified my father as a troublemaker. And so what they decided to do was send an askari into his camp. He worked for the PAC. And what an askari is someone who's reporting to two sides of the government. And so this askari managed to win my father's trust and led him into an ambush. So my father was an incredibly skilled driver, and he started driving towards Nelspruit. And as he approached the Nelspruit Bridge, Eugene de Kock had set up four men on either side of the bridge, and they all started firing at my dad's minibus. From the top of the bridge, Eugene realized the car wasn't coming to a stop. So he ran down the Nelspruit Bridge and he emptied out his magazine cartridge on my dad. When the car stopped, he decided, while he saw signs of life and my dad was still alive, he decided to douse him in fuel and set him alight. And so that was the first time we'd had so much information about how my dad had been taken. And so the conversation continued. And I remember, you know, my family said, I forgive you. And it finally got to me. And as much as I'm a chatterbox, you know this, Greg, I just didn't say anything throughout that whole meeting because I was just digesting. And finally, the pastor asked me, you know, do you have anything to say? And I said, hi, Eugene. And he looked at me and he said, hi. And I said, you know, I want to say I forgive you. But before I do, I need to ask you one question. And he looked at me and said, anything, what's that? And I said, I want to know, do you forgive yourself?
Wow.
And Craig, I remember this moment like it happened yesterday. He wiped the side of his eye because a tear had come down. And he looked back at me and he said, when you've done the things I've done, how do you forgive yourself? And I broke down. I just started to sob and cry and cry and cry. And what struck me in that moment was that I wasn't crying for myself. I wasn't crying for what he had done to me and my family. I was crying for this human being sitting in front of me because I realized there was nothing he could do to take away my pain, and there was nothing I could do to take away his.
Wow.
And so the encounter ended, and I stood up first because I was the closest to him. And while he was still sitting, I went to him and I said, Eugene, would you mind if I gave you a hug? And he looked at me confused. And he stood towering above me. And I remember he held me really tightly. And he said, I'm so sorry for what I've done. And your father would have been so proud of the woman you've become. And I went my way. I left Eugene in prison. And then I went on to advocate for his parole. And a few months later, he received it. So I guess that's why I'm sitting in front of you today.
Wow, Candace. I mean, I'm tearing up just listening to the story, and I've heard it before. It's a remarkable story. Love conquers all, doesn't it? Love conquers all.
It does.
Carry on, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, I wanted to say love does conquer all, but I think it's the love of self. You know, I didn't love myself when I was in pain and in anger and in resentment. I was punishing myself, and my body started to show it. And what I realized was by forgiving Eugene, I was really also forgiving myself, and I was giving myself permission to live again. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about teaching this work, because it is about loving of self, and it is about giving yourself the permission to live again.
It's beautiful. When you love yourself, you're able to love others. But let's unpack forgiveness, because I think it's got a bit of a lot of people misunderstand forgiveness. You know, people think forgiveness is justifying or rationalizing or saying what happened was okay. And it's absolutely not that, is it?
No, I do not believe in anything I've been taught about forgiveness, and I think everyone has been taught about forgiveness. Number one, I didn't forgive to get into heaven. I am a Christian. However, this was not a biblical forgiveness. It was a self-forgiveness. In many ways, I call it selfish because it was a way to set myself free. I do not believe in forgiving and forgetting, because the problem I have with that statement is, once we forgive something, why would we want to forget the thing that has made us the person we are? And so there's so many sentiments around forgiveness. And I also don't believe in being force-fed forgiveness. I think although it's an incredible gift to give yourself, I am never the person that goes to anyone in any situation and says, you have to forgive. I tell them my story and I share what I've done to get to the side, but I always say, take your time. It is not a linear process. It is a dance. Some days you're going to be here, but some days you're going to take 10 steps back, and it's okay. It's all a part of the journey.
It's really about rising above, isn't it? It's about taking back your power and becoming bigger than the evil that was perpetrated on you. You're bigger than it. You're greater than it. As long as you don't do that, you still remain a victim to it. I'll never forget Nelson Mandela's words. I mean, you've quoted this 1,000 times. When he came out of jail and someone asked him, are you not bitter and angry? And he said, you know, I've been in jail for 27 years. If I was bitter and angry, I'd still be in jail. I don't want to be in jail anymore. So there's an element of just personal freedom, of taking back power, and also rising above the evil that was perpetrated on you. That's really what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know what I think has been my driving force is that I realized when I was angry and in pain, I was like someone who was bleeding, and I was bleeding all over people who didn't cut me. And that's the problem when we live in resentment, anger, and pain. You go through the world assuming that everyone sees the world the way you do, and you end up becoming the perpetrator of other people because you are so angry, you want other people to hurt the way you're hurting. And what I had to realize is that it is not a virtuous thing to forgive. It is not something that, oh, you know, you're so great because you forgave. It is simply a way of saying, I have been victimized, but I refuse to live as a victim. And once you can do that, I find that you really take your whole life and you grasp it and you do what you were born to do in this world. And I think that's the power of forgiveness.
That's absolutely beautiful. And you know, whether or not the person you're forgiving is repentant, it's actually almost irrelevant to the process, isn't it? Because it's about you. It's about your freedom. And I love what you're saying too. It affects those around you. The more angry and bitter you are, firstly, it affects your own self. You become a bitter and twisted person, and it affects your health and your mental health and physical health. But as you were saying, it impacts on the people around you. You know, you lash out to them. They suffer as a result of you suffering. And all of that is giving power to the person who does not deserve the power. Person who needs to not have any power whatsoever in your life.
That is so true. And I don't think we reflect on that often enough. I don't think we are aware that when you are in anger and in pain, you are giving someone else the keys to your life. So it is always like, you know, there's this thing in South Africa in particular, at least that's what I know in South Africa, where if you didn't finish your food, then your parents would be like, there are people starving out there, you know? And it's funny because whether you finish your food or not, it doesn't impact someone else's, you know, hunger. And I think so often in this world, especially with social media, we're in such a constant state of comparison, and we're constantly putting ourselves in these spaces whereby we assume that we're not allowed to allow ourselves to feel pain, allow ourselves to be free because someone else has it worse than we do. And the thing I always say to people is that we are not in the pain Olympics. No one is getting a medal for having the biggest story and the biggest pain point. But what we do have to do is we have to take responsibility for the people we are today. Because the truth is, Craig, when you go through something, and I was in this position, people will give you license to be a terrible person. And people will say behind your back and say, oh, she's like that because this happened to her. But once you start becoming the perpetrator, people start thinking to themselves, grow up, you know, it happened to you, but now you are becoming a problem to society. And so it is about taking back that personal responsibility, forgiving, but not for the other person, forgiving for yourself and giving yourself the autonomy that you deserve and not allowing someone else to be your puppet master and you just living according to the beat of their painful infliction on you.
Yeah, it's so profoundly powerful, but yet so difficult. How many, you know, the saying that says, you know, unforgiveness is like taking poison and hoping it's going to hurt the other person. And revenge is very much like that too. You become obsessed with someone else. You're giving your power to someone else. They've already hurt you. They've already been sinful and evil in their actions. And you continue to allow them to have power over you. It's a dreadful cycle. How do you, you talked about social media, and social media has become quite a toxic platform. I mean, it's a platform for good, but it can also be toxic. And there's so much blaming. There's so much deflecting of it's your fault. I'm blaming the government. I'm blaming someone else. I'm blaming my circumstances. How would you address someone who becomes, they say that self-pity is the most unattractive quality in the world. You know, someone who's feeling sorry for themselves is really quite a miserable human being, and they're very unattractive. And yet self-pity and blame and unforgiveness are so inextricably linked. How do you break out of that, Candace? I mean, you one of the most amazing things about someone like yourself is you have incredible authority now in talking about forgiveness. You know, it's very easy to say to someone, "Oh, get over it. You've never been through it." But I mean, you've been through someone who perpetrated unthinkable evils on you and your family, and so you've got the authority of knowing how to do it. How would you talk to someone who's stuck in this, blaming, self-pity, unforgiveness? You know, what kind of advice? You said earlier you can't force it on them, but, you know, there's things we could do to maybe coax them out of that state.
There are things that we can do to help the people we love or the people we see in pain, but I also think it's not our responsibility to change people. And I also don't think we have the power to change people. I think it's a very arrogant viewpoint to assume that you are so enlightened, you can change someone else's behavior. What I do believe is that you can be the catalyst that allows someone to change their own behavior. And I think what's happening is, especially when you're pointing it towards social media, Craig, it's we are being rewarded for victimhood. This is the first time in history whereby you get rewarded for being a victim. So whether it's the algorithm that will push your content because more people are going to engage with that content, or you are being told that because you're Black, because you're a woman, because of whatever the circumstances you may have experienced, you won't get anywhere in society. And if anything, I think it damages the person who's been through pain. I think it damages the person who inhabits that identity, because initially it might feel good to say, oh, so many other people get my struggle. They get my pain. They know where I'm coming from. But the problem is it starts to erode your own autonomy in this world, because you think, oh, well, the whole world is designed to be against me anyway. So why would I try? And what is happening is so many people are starting to give and surrender their own power. And they're saying, these things have happened to me, these sequence of events. This is the ecosystem I was born into. And therefore, I don't even care. I'm not even going to try. And when you don't try, you don't get rewarded. There's nothing good that happens in your life. But what ends up happening is when you decide that I don't care. I don't care if I'm not the most attractive person. I don't care if I'm not the smartest person. I don't care if I'm Black or in the LGBTQ+. I am who I am, and I'm going to get the thing that I want in my life for myself. Because that hard work, that chiseling away at your own identity and chiseling away at these things that you're giving yourself as excuses and crutches, strengthens your mind. It strengthens the person you are. And most importantly, gives you the tools to bet on yourself. And you're like, I don't care what's out there. I'm going to bet on myself and I'm going to make something happen. So I think it's about changing the nature of the conversation that we currently have just globally.
I love what you're saying, and I could not agree more. It's 100% correct. You know, victimhood is so incredibly disempowering. Group identity too can also be very disempowering, because whatever that group has been through, whatever that group, you say, it's not up to me as an individual. It's up to me as a group, and therefore I suffer from whatever maladies that group suffers from, and you disempower yourself. I love what you said earlier that, you know, as you forgave, it was about you and it was about setting yourself free, but setting yourself free so that you can become fully alive and fulfill your destiny and do everything you can do to make this world a better place. And look, Candace, I've always been a great admirer of you, and I look at you and I see you making a huge difference, you know, around the world, not just in South Africa. And by doing what you've done, you've enabled yourself to be a powerful influence for good. And that's a beautiful thing. What would you say? You know, the whole concept of this podcast is dangerous but good. We can only do good to the extent that we have the power to do that. And therefore, we all have a sacred responsibility, I believe, to become as powerful as we possibly can. And then once we grow that power, we utilize that power to make the world a better place, to be a force for good. What would you say are some of the keys to becoming the most powerful, influential, effective person you can be? And it's not about pride or arrogance or riding money. It's about being the very best you can be, being everything God made you to be so that you can have an impact for good.
Yeah, I love that question. The first thing I'd say is all of us are going to have things that work for our favor. These are just things that we are born with. These are things that are out of our control in many ways. They are just given to us, right? So whether that is you happen to be attractive, or you speak really well, or you've got a way with words, or you charismatic, or you know how to make people laugh, whatever those things are, harness those gifts that you have already been given. Work on those. Number two, do not allow yourself to lie to yourself. I think the biggest thing I find in my career is it's incredible how far we will run to get away from ourselves. And so often people are running and they don't realize that the very thing they're running from is the thing they need to heal in order to live the life that they are pursuing and chasing. And for me, what I found the most powerful tool for me is being, number one, incredibly honest with myself. Number two, experiencing my emotion. I do not believe that everyone should be positive all the time or your life is going to fall apart. I believe emotions are there for a reason. Anger expressed in the right way can be a powerful emotion. So much of things I've done in my life have been fueled by anger, the anger with injustice, the anger with the things that are happening in the world. You know, it's fueled by anger, but I channel it in the right way. Sadness, if I need to cry, I will cry. But the thing is, I give myself time. I do not live in any emotion. I allow emotions to come and then sweep through, because I think the biggest thing that happens to people is they live within an emotion. And the problem with that is they start creating stories about themselves and about their lives based on these temporary emotions. I will never be loved because my dad didn't love me. I can never get paid beyond a certain amount because no one else in my family's ever been. I can never be a star because, you know, no one in this town becomes a star. And the truth is, when you're really honest with yourself, you realize that all your excuses are just self-protection mechanisms. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be hurt. You don't want to put your neck out there. And so you'd rather keep yourself in this cocoon. And the truth is, Craig, all of us are just here for one lifetime. I may not be the person that resonates with you. Someone else might be. We're not supposed to be everyone's cup of tea. We're not here to make everyone happy. What we're here to do is fulfill the mission that's going to be for the greatest good of humanity and the greatest good for ourselves and our families.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Keep talking, sister. That's beautiful. I mean, it's all about, you know, whatever you've got, make it work. Whatever you've got, grow it. Make it happen. You know, I think a lot of what we were talking about earlier, the blame and the all that, also leads to a sense of entitlement. It's kind of a sense of, I need to wait back and the world owes me. The world owes me. You know? And I think that's a very destructive attitude as well. The world owes us nothing. You know, it's given us certain gifts. It's given us also certain challenges, some far greater challenges than others. But the reality is, it is what it is. We can only do the best with what we've got. And that's what it's all about. No entitlement. No one owes us anything. We need to make it happen.
That is so true, Craig. But I also think there is a reason why we feel so entitled all of a sudden, right? Because just before I matriculated, which is about 12 years ago now, I remember social media had started to have a rise. But before then, if you wanted to be in touch with someone or know what someone in your life had been doing, you needed to see them, or you needed to bump into someone who knew them, and they would tell you about, oh, Paul is now an accountant or whatever. this is the first time in history where we open our phones first thing in the morning and we are inundated with these superficial realities. And we see people's highlight reels and we assume that everyone in the world is living a better reality than we are. But what we don't realize is we're comparing our behind the scenes, the part where, you know, you're taking your kids to school, you know, you're cleaning the house, you're doing laundry, all this unglamorous, not so fun stuff. No one is posting that. No one's like, oh my goodness, I'm carrying 10 bags of groceries. Let me take a picture and post it on Instagram, you know? And so we are comparing our everyday realities to everyone else's. And we assume that you should have what someone else has without having the full picture of how they got it. So I think that's become the danger in society.
You're 100% right. We know the worst of us. We know our fears and our struggles and our depression and those things we go through and how we look in the morning when we first get up. We don't put that out there. And we compare that with everyone else's best foot forward. Absolutely. I mean, you're on this podcast looking fabulous, dressed to the, you know, absolutely gorgeous. We see that, but we don't see the deep, deep, deep struggles. It's that at the tip of the iceberg. Hey, I mean, success is just the tip, but beneath the surface is 9/10 of your life, which is all the struggle. So, I mean, if it is to paraphrase a lot of what you're saying, we need to just get over ourselves and really not care what people think and be the very best we are, unapologetically in a way, unapologetic. I see that with you. You know, you're powerfully unapologetic, but you are who you are. If you love it, great. I like to be loved. If you don't, well, you know, that's not really my problem. It's your problem. I'm still going to get on with doing what I believe God has called me to do. And that's a lovely, it's a very empowering attitude, isn't it?
Well, I think all of us have to learn, Craig, we are not in the business of negotiating our worth. And I think so often that's what we do. We come to the table in relationships and friendships and work, and we feel that our job is to negotiate with the other party of what you are worth. I am worth this because I've done a million things and, you know, this and this and that. And the truth is, yes, there are parameters. Of course, if you're negotiating a business deal, right? This is when it comes into effect where, yes, this is what I charge. This is why I charge it. But when you are going into the entire world and you're posting it to people you don't even know and you're bumping into people on the road, whatever, and you feel like you constantly need to be proving yourself, I need you to know I'm great, right? That's what's fueling our overconsumption at the moment. You see how all these designer brands are leading people into complete bankruptcy because people are buying things so that other people will assume that there's something that they are trying to portray. And at the end of the day, if you love yourself and you are continuously pouring into yourself and saying, I am a human being, not a human doing. I do not need to do for people to accept me. All of us should be improving all the time. All of us should feel good about ourselves. If you want to put on makeup, fantastic. If you don't, fantastic. But your value cannot be based on what another individual thinks of you. That's an internal negotiation, and no one else has the right to tell you what you're worth and not worth.
Fantastic. So, I mean, largely we live our lives allowing ourselves to be valued by what other people think. Just as unforgiveness allows someone who's perpetrated an evil to you power over your lives indefinitely, so even if you have forgiven, we need to avoid the trap of living our lives wanting to please people, wanting to live up to other people's expectations of us, because we then give them the power to value us. And by doing so, we undervalue ourselves, don't we? And those are two very profound truths. Take your most important relationship, Candace, this is one thing I realized late in life. My most important relationship is the one I have with myself, because I spend every moment of every waking day with myself. I go to the toilet with myself. I go to bed with myself. I get up in the morning. And if that relationship's not good, my life's going to struggle. And what I see in you is someone who's got a beautiful relationship with yourself.
No, thank you, Craig. But can I tell you something that I make sure I make a point of at every talk that I do, at every event that I'm featured in, magazine, article, whatever? I really want people to understand that the most dangerous thing you can do as a human being is idolize any human being. Do not put a single person who breathes like you breathe, who walks like you walk, on a pedestal, because what that does is it eliminates your own autonomy. And you're like, well, She can do this because she was kissed by an angel. She can do this because she looks like this. She or he, whatever the thing is. When the truth is, every single one of your idols are deeply disappointing. The reason for that is every human being is deeply disappointing. There's no icon in history. Mother Teresa is one that gets used all the time. Like, oh, you know, you're as good as Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa had a troubling history. She was friends with troublesome people, drug slingers. She was, you know, she did not feed her community. Her hospitals killed millions of people. And so when we look at Mother Teresa, we think to ourselves, the beacon of enlightenment, the beacon of goodness. And she had incredibly good traits, but she also had incredibly troubling traits. And you can do that with me. You can do that with you. You can do that with anyone on the planet. And so our mission on this planet is not to be perfect. We are all screwed up in our own type of way. But it is to accept that I'm going to do the best with the hands that have been dealt to me. I'm not going to be the perpetrator of someone else's pain. And I'm going to live a life that's authentic to me. And the one thing that has changed my life in doing this is I do not take feedback. So I don't mean this in an arrogant way. I'll take feedback on my work. I'll take feedback on things that I'm practically executing. But I do not take compliments in the sense that if someone says something lovely to me, I say thank you, but I don't internalize it. Equally, what that allows me to do, if someone says something incredibly hurtful, I say thank you. I don't internalize it and I let it go because I refuse for the external world to rule what happens internally. And I think that's what we do too often. We're very quick to accept praise, but then that makes us very quick to accept criticism, and it's a double-edged sword.
Right. So it goes down to an accurate assessment of who we are as individuals. And then you need trusted people who know you, care for you, love you around you that can be mirrors to you. You know, so part of growing is as you said earlier, be 100% honest with yourself. So look in the mirror, get an accurate assessment, not too high, not too low, accurate, and grow from that. Candace, one of the most, as we're coming to the end of this, one of the most important things in life is to make a difference in other people's lives, whatever strengths, gifts, attributes we have, whatever power, influence we have, is to use that for good. And for me, at the very core of that is perhaps a couple of things, but one is love, wanting the highest good for everyone else. And the second is humanity. Before anything else, we're human beings. You and I are equally valuable human beings, whether we're male, female, black, white, Muslim, Christian, whatever else we are. Fundamentally, and most importantly, we're human beings. And so, you know, you've gone on this incredible journey. I'd love to hear a little bit about what you're doing now. You know, what are you doing? Because you truly are having an impact on the world. And, you know, how are you using all these insights and wisdom and strengths and things you've learned to impact the world?
Oh, thank you, Craig. I truly believe in what you're saying, too. I think so often we assume that our impact on Earth and our impact on humanity needs to be on a grand scale in order for us to be remembered. And the truth is, I don't know if I want to be remembered. I think the memories of those that were closest to me and those who loved me are the ones I care about the most. And I think all of us have the power to treat the people around us with courtesy, with kindness, and most importantly, allow ourselves to receive it. Because it's so interesting to me how bad so many people are at receiving love, at receiving compassion, at receiving empathy, but they're so good at giving it. So allow yourself to receive love. Allow yourself and people around you to be able to mess up and come to you, and you allow to mess up and go to the people that you love. So what am I doing right now? I am working in an Australian organization. I'm the co-CEO. It is called AIM. We are an Indigenous Knowledge Systems Lab. And basically what that means is that we work with organizations around the world and teach them Indigenous knowledge systems from around the world. So we know in South Africa that our tribal communities have so much wisdom, and it's just that that wisdom was not written on a piece of paper, but all of us have it within our DNA and we can access that. And what this Lab does is it takes that information and finally puts it in a way that we can actually use in the Western world or in environments where we are so removed from our cultures. So I'm very proud of that. We are putting kids through school. So we've put 10,000 Aboriginal kids from high school into college. And so it's an incredible organization to be a part of. I am also, of course, touring as a speaker. And so I just did a month and a half tour in Canada and the US, just touring the States, touring Canada, sharing about healing, personal responsibility, and most importantly, just learning to trust your inner guidance and knowing that you are your own guru. So that's really what I'm doing, Craig, and so many other things just in the background.
That's why you're tired all the time, eh, without partying.
I don't know. I think I'm tired because I'm 33 now, okay? Like, I'm not out here for the streets.
Well, the streets are worse off because of that.
No, the streets are calling, and I keep sending them to voicemail. I don't have time for it.
I like it. Know what you want. Know what your purpose is. Live it right. Eh? Be authentic. Be true to Candace Mama. Eh? That's the way to do it.
And you know what, Craig? Out of all of this, if people took nothing else from our conversation, have fun with your life. It's your life. You want to move to Rome. You want to fall in love in Ethiopia. You want to do whatever you want in New Zealand. Just freaking do it. You'll fail. You'll go back home. You'll rebuild, and you can do it all over again. So live your life. Have fun. Take risks and realize that life is too serious to be taken so seriously. So loosen up and have a good time.
One of my favorite quotes is, sometimes my bones creak under the weight of all the lives I'm not living. And you know, I think if you couple that to the quote that says, you know, instead of 30 years experience, a lot of people just have 1 year experience 30 times over. You know, so what you're saying is great. Eh? When is the last time you did something for the first time? You know, that's a good question to ask, isn't it?
So good. And
as ever, we could talk for hours. Wonderful chatting to you. And, when we start this podcast, Dangerous But Good, people think, you know, dangerous is a bad thing. But I look at someone like yourself. You're a lovely soul. You've got a loving, caring, gentle heart. And yet you're a dangerous woman. You're a dangerous woman. You're dangerous to the things that are a danger to society. You're dangerous to revenge, dangerous to hatred, dangerous to intolerance. And that's a beautiful thing. And we all have to be dangerous to whatever's dangerous to society. So, Candace, I officially declare you dangerous but good.
Thank you, Craig.
Awesome chatting, and keep up the fantastic work, and let's chat again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.